Danny and Dusty.
My Uncle Gus is the uncle that likes to work the grill. As soon as he walk in the house, he's like, get away from that grill. You don't know how to start no fire.
With the latest on the Blazers, Ducks, Beavers, and the hottest topics in sports.
We're going to eat a hamburger, okay? Here we go. Chandler, throw the match. Now that's a fire.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080.
I'm not cooking a brontosaurus burger.
The Fan.
We can kiss my ass. Big ass boy.
Hour number three here on Danny and Dusty on a Monday afternoon. Whether you listen on 1080 AM, watching along on YouTube.com/1080AM The Fan, or Twitch.tv/1080AM The Fan. We appreciate you. We love you. Lots of different ways to take in Danny and Dusty.
Yeah, it's a growing list of ways that you can take in this program and all the other programs as well.
Yes, the list of ways you can take us in is growing.
You know, I can't take you anywhere. Nowhere.
What am I? You put it on a tee. What am I supposed to do?
That is 7 and 9 bull. Mm.
7 and 10 now, I guess. But
he needs to do a new one. He really should, just for
he does
for the people.
Yes, just we need it. We need a patch.
Maybe hey, work on booking Jeff Fisher so we can get that is 7 and 10 BS.
Just get him to say the word 10. That's all we need. Just say 10.
Just in monotone and put that over the top of it.
And we can patch it.
7 and 10.
You book Jeff Fisher, and I'll be like, now we have Jeff Fisher on. Hey,
on National Mustache Day.
What comes after 9?
First question, what is between 9 and 11?
The Saudis.
Thank you. Have a great day. And we just get out.
And we're good.
Yeah.
Oh, we're going to get into the women's college basketball final. South Carolina, Iowa.
That was a hell of a basketball game.
Before we dive into it real quick, the ratings have been released. And for the people who text in or say things on Twitter like, stop talking about women's basketball, nobody cares. This is my polite way of telling you to shut the hell up. 18.7 million tuned in for Iowa, South Carolina.
Wow.
With a peak of 24 million.
That's a lot of people. And look,
that is a record number.
There is star power.
And that's what matters right there.
That's it. Caitlin Clark going back-to-back, people wanting to see either her success. And look, there's a lot of people looking for Caitlin Clark to fail.
Oh, God,
yes. It was amazing.
That's how you know she's great.
And yeah, this is like, I love that women's basketball and women's college basketball has gotten this stage, and they've run away with all of the publicity that they've gotten. Mm-hmm. And it has been great for the sport. It's been great to see like my daughter and her friends even caring about, you know, the women's tournament and women's basketball now. That has all been really cool. The thing that it just bothers me to no end is that now that women's college basketball is being watched by the masses, it's almost like, no, we can't have women's college basketball this way. How dare they say anything negative about Caitlin Clark?
And that's the thing.
How dare they consider her the GOAT? That's how you know you've arrived as a premier sport in this country, is that irrational takes and stupid people spouting off about your sport. It means that they care.
Here's the thing, before we're going to dive into the GOAT conversation.
It's like we've watched this with every single athlete who has achieved greatness, where people will prop them up and people will try to
Skip
tear
Bayers
them
made
down.
A career out of it. And getting millions of dollars.
And this is like, it's not always going to be all kumbaya, because I think like there's an element of fans that kind of want that to continue, because there was always a niche and tight following of women's college basketball that they always propped the sport up because they were always hoping to grow it and grow it and grow it. 18.7 million people are watching.
Yep.
People are watching. And they're not going to be as nuanced, and they're not going to know as much. Like, soccer has had this in America for the longest time, where it was like, why don't more people watch soccer? But then people start watching soccer, and they're like, you don't know what you're talking about!
It's the artificial gatekeeping, and you see this, and it's not just unique to women's sports, so before anybody loses
that's
it,
why I said
crap.
Soccer.
Like, yeah, no, that's, and that's the thing, is like, it's unique to whatever niche sport is out there.
That's the other biggest glaring example.
Yeah, no, it's... But there's been, particularly around women's sports, there's been this You have to champion women's sports. If you say anything negative, you are against it. You are evil. You are bad. It's like, no. Talking about the sport honestly is when you've actually made it. Mm-hmm. And honestly, right now, what Caitlin Clark has done is absolutely incredible. And honestly, the way that she is discussed is very dumb, particularly by former UConn players. When you just talking about the greatness of Caitlin Clark, okay? For those that don't know, most of the time in women's college basketball has been dominated by two teams, Tennessee and UConn. If you look at the best women's basketball teams of all time, it's going to be some juxtaposition of Tennessee versus UConn over and over and over again. What Caitlin Clark has done throughout her career, now taking Iowa to back-to-back national title games.
Dragging them.
Look, I'm not trying to denigrate her teammates.
No, Marshall is a really good player, defender. Who's their big, their post starts with an S.
Stolke.
Stolke.
Yeah.
Stolke is, she is a fine player, but we saw like Cordoso from South Carolina. That girl is a stone cold killer. And she's what, 6'8"?
6'7", 6'8", yeah.
Good Lord. They've got a very good team at Iowa. But if we were talking about any other basketball team, it would be akin to LeBron dragging the Cavaliers to the NBA Finals,
yes,
right? And that's an okay thing to say.
This is 09 LeBron. That's what this is.
And where they're fine players, there's really good players and solid players, but your team was not nearly as talented or prolific in any other category as most teams that end up in the national title game. And that's a fair thing to say.
If you look at like the 2009-2010 women's team at UConn, one of the better teams, they had Maya Moore, Tina Charles.
Okay.
Which
was really good.
I don't know if you know this, the two of maybe the best players to ever play the game. Is that happening at Iowa?
No.
Okay. Go look at the Tennessee rosters. Go look at all of the UConn rosters up and down. Look at the teams that Diana Taurasi played on.
Yeah.
Look at the teams Sue Bird played on.
Boy, Diana Taurasi and Sue Bird are taking shots at Caitlin Clark.
Mm-hmm.
And I like it. I think it ultimately it will be good for the women's game because they're like, she's going to have an awakening when she comes to the WNBA. Now, Caitlin Clark will be a really good WNBA player, but boy, she's got a target on her back because of how much she's been propped up. And whether they're because they're both former UConn players or the fact that they're WNBA players that have been established, and Diana Taurasi is one of the greatest of all time to play in the WNBA, you sit there and you go, yeah, I like that there's this S talk, though, back and forth, because one, they're trying to protect their school, and the other, they're saying when she comes to the W, it's going to be a little bit different. And I hope she goes and she tears it up in the WNBA because that's the only way that this rise continues. Because there was a surge when Sabrina went to the WNBA, mm-hmm. and there was an adjustment period for Sabrina.
Yep.
She's adjusted, fully adjusted to the life of the
open.
WNBA. And she is. But all the people that started tuning in early...
She lost some of the heat.
The all of a sudden, the viewers started dwindling a little bit more because it was like... Well, you want to see the greatness. You want to see that dominance. And I hope that for the WNBA's sake, Caitlin Clark continues to dominate because it'll be good for the growth of the sport.
When you talk about Caitlin Clark, can you be considered the GOAT if you don't win a title? Because I lean towards yes because of what she did.
I mean, it's greatness from start to finish in her career. She's mm-hmm. the all-time leading scorer despite...
playing at Iowa.
Well, and despite the fact that... Did you see... What's her name? Woodard, the former scoring champion.
Mm-hmm. Lynette Woodard.
Lynette Woodard said, because she went at Caitlin Clark, and this is great too.
I am the hidden figure, but no longer now. My record was hidden from everyone for 43 years. I don't think, I'll just go ahead and get the elephant out of the room. I don't think my record has been broken because you can't duplicate what you're not duplicating. And so unless you come with a men's basketball and a two-point shot, hey, you know.
How about that? Like, we forget when she played they didn't have a women's size basketball. They played with the men's size basketball. Mm-hmm. And she's saying, we didn't have three-point line either. So my record still stands.
Well, and I believe women's basketball was also not under the NCAA umbrella.
That's why her scoring record does not count in the official record books. I don't.
Why don't you go ahead and play against that South Carolina team and see how well you
do? Yeah, that Lynette Woodard, like, what she did was great. And I think greatness translates.
Yes.
But what Caitlin Clark did was, when everything is established, when the game has taken off, when you have to go through
under the brightest lights.
Well, she went through LSU, UConn, and then South Carolina.
Had she beaten South Carolina, she would have basically killed three giants her way there.
She did it for 4 years. No, she is greatness in women's college basketball. Is she the most complete player in women's college basketball? No, because she's not a very good defender.
No.
And they were hiding her in the championship game. They hit her against UConn on defense. They do have really good defenders. But, like, that doesn't matter. The scoring record is greatness.
And not only that, she's a playmaker as well.
The rise of popularity in the game goes right alongside number 22 for Iowa. So, yeah, you can be the greatest and not be a champion. That happens. It just so happens that most of the people that we do consider the greatest of all time have a buttload of championships too, whether it's Tom Brady or LeBron James or Michael Jordan. You know, like, the silly thing is that Caitlin Clark, she's more Mike Trout than she is LeBron James.
Ooh.
Because
that's a good one.
You can't deny their greatness, but they can't win in the playoffs because it's a team sport. At the end of the day, it is still a team sport. And so, I mean, we aren't sitting there and saying, Mike Trout's not the greatest. Well, you look at what he's doing. Yeah, he's pretty damn good. Really good. And probably one of the best to ever do it based on his war.
Yeah, that might be the one. Like, you look at it and you go, that might be the best player of all time. But what's around just doesn't
Never going to have a ring.
Like, throw Maya Moore on this Iowa team. Throw Brianna Stewart on this Iowa team. Throw Elena Deladon. Throw Diana Taurasi. Throw one other of those great players that all those other great teams all had. Throw one of them on that Iowa team. They're murdering.
With Caitlin Clark.
With Caitlin Clark. They're a buzzsaw. Because what was the thing that South... And I'm not taking away from South Carolina. They were undefeated this year. They were great. But what's the thing that killed them? Is that they got murdered by size.
That South Carolina team is not getting enough credit.
No,
dude. The conversation today.
Buzzsawed was 38-0.
And they went undefeated throughout the entire season. As Don Staley said, the best part about this championship is that it was unexpected. The whole run to being as dominant as they were from start to finish this season, they didn't even see this coming. And I think that championship game was great for the women's game and for South Carolina too, because South Carolina went through and they knocked off the queen of basketball in Caitlin Clark, and they did it emphatically. Mm-hmm. And look, Caitlin Clark got hers. She also got 30 points on 28 shots. Like,
yeah, she
South Carolina did a phenomenal job on her.
The thing that stands out to me in this game is 51-29.
Is that
the rebounding differential? Cardoso had more offense, as many offensive rebounds as all of Iowa.
And that right there, that was the game. That was the game. And South Carolina fell into like an 11-0 hole, and they just kept whittling away. And it was like, dude, that team is way better top to bottom.
Good. Turns out size matters.
Yup.
Still there. All right, coming up next from the women's game to the men's game, we'll preview the NCAA men's final tonight between UConn and Purdue. Danny Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Danny and Dusty on The Fan.
Transitioning from the women's game to the men's game, the final for the men's game is on tonight between Purdue and UConn. And you have two of the biggest humans on the planet duking it out.
A lot of beef on the floor. 7'4" versus 7'2". I'm here for it.
Don McLean versus Zach Edey. And for some people, a lot of poorly informed people, it's going to decide who goes where in the NBA draft.
That ain't happening.
Oh, my God. The amount of narratives that are coming out of this from NBA fans around the league is going to be hilarious. And I'm going to have to deal with a bag full of questions from Blazers fans. Like, why don't they take Edey or Klingon?
Can I say that, Zach, I had this thought watching the Final Four on Saturday. Zach Edey should grow his hair out. And then he can be like he can like market himself as Sasquatch.
Or
like
Luis Scola 2.0.
If he had, I would like to imagine he's got thick hair. I'd like to imagine it's more of Steven Adams.
That's exactly what I was just going to say with Steven Adams.
Man bun it.
Yeah, like just go long and, you know, Zach Edey can be the Sasquatch out there, just lumbering up and down the floor. I would be here for all of it for Zach Edey to do that.
Chewbacca.
I'm excited for this game, though, because you have two things at play here. You can have a back-to-back national title if UConn wins.
What a Wookiee.
And then if Purdue wins, then that solidifies both teams that lost to 16 seeds as a one would go on the very next year and win a national title.
And they both have titles. And you'd have Purdue finally being able to shake the bugaboo, Edey being National Player of the Year and kind of living up to it. Because when was the last time a National Player of the Year won a title?
Oh, boy.
I feel like it's been a while.
I don't know. I have no idea.
It's been a while. Like, a long while, I feel like.
And then, like, Gene Cady, who is still alive, according to my Google research. Gene Cady, still alive. He can finally have, like, Purdue win a title. Because, like, growing up, like, I loved watching those Gene Cady Purdue teams. And Purdue has had a really good basketball program for a very long time. And it was just like they are the epitome of cannot get over the hump. You know, 1980 was their last Final Four. Then you get into now the fact that Matt Painter gets bounced by a 16 seed. And Painter is a phenomenal coach. And the fact that they're doing it at a time where this isn't supposed to be where the Purdue's of the world are the ones winning national titles, because everything is supposed to be skewed more towards the blue blood programs and the programs that have the most money. And it's not like Purdue is this broke boy school in the Big Ten, but they're not one of the big spenders in NIL they're not hauling in 5-star recruit year after year after year. They do it a little bit differently. And I appreciate when those schools win national titles in this era, because it's really stinking hard to do.
Yeah, and having that ability to do that at that level just consistently.
Yeah.
With what Painter's done and what UConn has done. UConn through three different coaches now. Painter through, how many years has he been there now? 14? 15? I feel like Painter's
been that long.
I feel like Painter's been at Purdue for a long time.
Golly. Okay. But you're saying? But I'll go look that up.
I'll say it's just incredibly difficult to keep it going. And I'm going through the National Players of the Year and then looking back and forth at the title winners. Jay Williams?
It's been 19 years Matt Painter's been at Purdue.
Yeah, it's been there a long time, man.
Yeah.
But Jay Williams is the last one.
Is the last player of the year to win a national title.
Jay Williams, 2001, Duke won the title. National Player of the Year, Jay Williams, 2000, 2001, and 01, 02.
Hey, let's go to Coach K and see how he feels about the possibility of Zach Edey becoming the latest National Player of the Year to win a national title since his Jay Williams. I'm looking right at you, Jeff.
I love Dunk.
And there we go.
Sound like a question mark even.
And there it is right there. Coach K, everybody, chiming in on Zach Edey potentially being the first National Player of the Year to win a national title since Jay Williams.
I love Dunk.
There you go.
There have been some remembering some guys in here. Brunson was a National Player of the Year. I don't remember him being a National Player of the Year, but he was.
Well, didn't they win a national title with him? So wouldn't he be the last one? I mean,
it was the year before.
Oh.
Year before.
All right.
As weird as that is.
So it's really hard, man.
And yeah, and having it line up has just been really weird. Because
the biggest crapshoot in the world is the NCAA tournament, though, because of the upsets, because of the matchups and styles make fights, and then just kind of the you have certain teams that they're not built for winning in these one-off tournaments, right? You have teams that are just built for the grind, and then all of a sudden, like a team like North Carolina State pops up that they're peak at the right time at the end of the year, and you could be a national championship caliber team, but all of a sudden you have a team like NC State that hits their stride at the right moment, and boom, you're Tennessee and Rick Barnes and squashed yet again for you. It's
poor,
hard to do, man. That's what makes everything about what Danny Hurley has done so much more impressive. And the thing that's really going to suck is that if UConn wins that national title, one of the first questions when he's at the podium will be, are you going to listen to the Kentucky job?
Yeah.
Are you going to be a guy that is going to leave UConn after winning back-to-back national titles and having seemingly the perfect culture for the way you want to coach and go to Kentucky? Like, that sucks. That is the worst thing about, you know, our media landscape and the way we handle things. It's just like after
on to the next,
you know, Stanford wins the Orange Bowl and Harbaugh and Andrew Luck are on the field at the same time, and they're on the field, and the on-field interview is, "Are you going to enter the NFL draft, Andrew Luck?" Like, let him celebrate the win, and then guess what? Danny Hurley's going to be in front of a lot of different cameras, and this question will get answered in short order. You
and
don't
the red
have
assery
to ask. It.
Will be legendary.
Oh, he is going to lay into whatever dumbass asked that question.
That's the thing is, maybe the fear of being embarrassed on TV will stop it.
No,
but I doubt it,
because you know how many morons have no shame in our industry.
Yes,
they will ask that question just because it's like, well, somebody had to ask it. No, they didn't. Not today. They didn't have to do it, and it doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter, because is the answer that you're going to get tonight genuine?
No.
No, because, it's not.
Because if he is going to look at it, he's not going to tell you.
Exactly.
So,
exactly.
Honestly, he should look at it.
Yeah, everybody should. If nothing else, to get a raise.
Yeah.
Which he'll get a hefty one
after
if he wins another
national titles. All right, speaking of money, when we come back, we'll talk about the aforementioned Matt Painter and the change, as it were, in NIL. But first, here's the Big Kahuna with a Sports Center update.
That's that Hawaiian burger joint.
This is Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and Portland's sports leader, 1080, The Fan.
Well, it's a hot route, but we're talking college basketball. Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic.
Tell me more.
Has some pretty important news as it pertains to, what could be a big change in college basketball. And hell, this might apply to college football as well. The NCAA's Division I Council can adopt emergency legislation for a new transfer eligibility rule at its April 17th or through the 18th meeting. Proposed legislation would allow all undergraduate athletes to transfer and play immediately as long as they meet specific academic requirements.
And this is all wrapped into the lawsuits against the NCAA from Tennessee, West Virginia, about the transfer portal in smashing down any hopes. They have open transfers right now because of the fact that they had to do the temporary stay on any squashing of transfers. Tez Watkins from North Carolina, remember that saga? It was an absolute S show. But the NCAA has got to start allowing free transfer, because the courts have just been crushing them left and right, and they're going to continue to get crushed in the courts. So the emergency legislation, it's about to run out. Yep. I think it was to the end of the month, and now they're just going to rip the Band-Aid
everything.
Off, yeah. And it's the right thing to do, because the stupidest thing about the NCAA's transfer rules are that it only pertains to some sports. I've never understood why they have such arbitrary rules about just football and basketball, yet if you're a baseball player or you're a lacrosse player, sure, go ahead.
It was about protecting their cash cows. That's what it was always about.
And now they've run into a brick wall time and time again, and it's got to be a time for a change, and we're here at this point. I'm not necessarily for it. I don't think we should have free transfer all the time. I understand as an 18-year-old kid, you'll make a mistake. You should be allowed to get a free transfer. Then I appreciate the fact that, all right, you get that one freebie, then go and get your degree, and after that, you can use your grad transfer. I think that's okay, because that is two transfers right there that you can have instead of just bouncing four. We're going to have guys four years in four different schools.
And think about that at that age, how well you would have handled changing schools once. I mean, my wife did. She went down to U of O for a year, and she's like, "Ah, not for me." Finished up at PSU.
I went to Montana Western, then went to Southern Oregon.
You kind of understand what you want in life. But if you're doing it four times, like, it's kind of look. But also, that's what you want to do. That's what you want to do. If you want to chase the money, chase the money. Auerbach says in the proposed legislation, there's no limit on the number of times an athlete can transfer. Transfer windows would still exist in the new system, and you still can't transfer mid-year and play for a second school in the same season.
It's totally different. But when I was in high school, we played Gresham High School to start the year, and they had Ronald and Reggie Richmond on their team, who were two really good players. And something happened during that game. It was the first game of the year, and one of them like left the field, threw his helmet. He was gone, quit. Our first round playoff game, we played them again at Franklin High School, completely different high school. We played them twice in the same year on two different teams. And that's a wild turn of events there.
Stuff happens.
But you shouldn't be able to transfer mid-year and be like, yeah, I'm out. Sorry.
Bama loses week one. You transfer to Georgia.
Yeah, I'm out. I'm going to go somewhere else. I'm glad that you can't do that. But look, and also in all of the transfer stuff, I think that those two transfers are okay, but also having the transfer rule that is in place right now, which is if your head coach leaves, you have the ability to leave as well. I think that is good, because with all the turnover that we have in coaching right now, most guys are available to have three different transfers that they can have, and that's okay. Like, I mean, hell, look at Oregon's quarterback heading into this year, Dylan Gabriel, right? He's on his third school. Mm-hmm. He started at Central Florida, had catastrophic knee injury, then transfers to Oklahoma, gets his degree, boom, grad transfer. He's got a year at Oregon. Like that to me, I'm okay with that. That is totally fine. But when you go, I'm just unhappy and I'm a diva and
chasing NIL.
And also, it's not going to help your draft stock if you are on four different schools in 4 years, or you go to three different schools in 3 years.
But what if you go to hear me out now.
Yeah.
What if you go play in three different conferences to say, well, you didn't do that in the SEC. Well, you didn't do that in the Big Ten. Well, you didn't do that in the ACC.
Yeah.
But what if I did it in all three? Just saying.
Yeah.
Couldn't handle that in the Big Ten. Handled it.
Not bad. That's 3D chess right there.
Right?
You're playing 3D. They're playing checkers. You're playing 3D chess.
You know, you come in as a freshman and in the ACC. Oh, you couldn't handle that in the Big Ten. You know, you go from Clemson to Michigan.
Watchmen.
Go out there, get it done. Go from Michigan to Georgia.
It's not a bad move.
I'm just saying.
All right. Well, the winds are changing.
The winds are changing, and this is just the latest in another. See, look, as much as everybody, we talk about college football, where this is going to have a massive impact is college basketball.
And one thing that does not get talked about enough is the fact that Nicole Auerbach looks like Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, she does. Good for her.
Yeah.
Good for her.
Yeah. I mean, it's a doppelganger situation.
Yeah, if you're going to have a doppelganger, having a stupidly fun, hot doppelganger is
fun. I had no idea. I had no idea that Nicole Auerbach looked like Aubrey Plaza until like a month ago.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll be damned. It's a dead ringer.
Yeah. You could definitely see her getting stopped in Times Square and being like, oh
my God, it's Aubrey Plaza. No, I'm just a college football reporter.
There's a Warriors fan who looks exactly like Steve Kerr, and he's right. His seats are like right by the Warriors tunnel. And so he'll be like right there sometimes, like as, you know, celebrities come in and out. God, who was it? There was somebody super famous at a Warriors game a couple weeks ago who stopped and took a picture with him.
Oh.
There's an article, one of the National Athletic or whatever writers did a profile on him.
Well, there's a Klay Thompson guy, too, who does that.
Who does look a lot like Klay Thompson, especially now that's washed Klay Thompson. He really looks like him.
Yeah, those doppelgangers are good, especially the Klay Thompson guy looks like Klay and then dresses in a full uniform.
Which,
it's a little weird. It's a little weird.
Look, if I looked exactly like a player, I might have a little bit of fun with it, too. Just, you know, there's only a foot of difference between me and them.
That's right. That's right. They're a little bit taller, but go ahead. Live that life.
If I was like
kind of look like Donovan Klingon.
I'm kind of mad at you about that, but you're also not wrong.
Kind of look like Donovan Klingon.
Yeah, fatter Donovan Klingon. I look like what Donovan Klingon will look like when he's washed.
You're Kling-Kong. Kling-Kong.
Kling-Kong.
Kling-Kong. That's his nickname, not Klingon.
Yeah.
It's Kling-Kong.
Kling-Kong.
Mm. There we go.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Well, and I was asking for this, that we have Godzilla versus Kong in this title game, and we got it. We're here. We've got Godzilla versus Kong. And I have not seen a single commercial for Godzilla versus Kong with Zach Eadie and Donovan Klingon. And that is a whiff by the movie studios, because there's a new movie coming out.
Well, it's out.
There's a new movie out.
It's a new movie out.
New movie out right now. I also want to see The Fall Guy, the new Ryan Gosling movie.
Wait, what?
Yeah, it's a Fall Guy movie.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It looks pretty kick-ass.
Okay.
I'm in.
You've piqued my interest. Coming up next, we'll get ready to hand you off to Isaac Suit coming up next. But when we come back, Idiocracy is upon us. Danny and Dusty, 1080 The Fan.
Well, I'm not the kind to kiss and tell, but I've been seen with Farrah. I've never been with anything less than a 9. So fine.
Here's the pitch by Downing. Swinging. There's a drive into left center field. That ball is going to be out of here. It's gone. It's 7:15. There's a new home run champion of all time, and it's Henry Aaron.
Danny and Dusty on the Odyssey app and 1080 The Fan.
50th anniversary of Hank Aaron's 715th home run today.
Hammering Hank.
Hammering Hank Aaron.
And it's still one of the coolest side stories that Craig Sager was out there on the field, too.
Yeah.
Like, Craig Sager was one of the nicest dudes.
But back then, his suit jackets weren't that loud.
Because it was the 70s. Yeah, everything was loud.
Because everything else was loud. Yes, yeah. Exactly.
Quick derailment.
Ooh.
Further proof that we're heading towards Idiocracy.
Okay.
Currently trending on Google searches, why do my eyes hurt?
Oh, boy. I saw a TikTok video of this earlier today. There was a woman who was like, somebody had a thing, you need to wear glasses for the eclipse. And she came in over the top and was like, well, 6 years ago, there was an eclipse, and I looked at it with one eye, and then the next morning I woke up, and I was blind in my left eye. It's like, you think? If only anybody your entire life has always told you, don't look at the sun, and definitely don't look at a solar eclipse with no glasses. She's like, I didn't believe him, but it's real. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, your pupils dilate, so it's like getting the sun directly in your eyeball. Like the sun reaching inside your eyeball and saying, let me in.
Trey Young a little bit ago tweeted, yeah. He said, so we need glasses for this or nah? And Donovan Mitchell retweeted it and said, no, man, go ahead. Look straight at it. You should be good.
I love Donovan Mitchell. Perfect. Perfect.
Wait, hold on. It'd be even better if they play the Hawks tomorrow.
Yeah.
They don't. They got the Grizzlies. Josh Hart had a tweet. Do we actually need glasses for this? And his replies were, yes. Are
Please,
you kidding
for the love
me?
Of God, don't do
and
this.
His next tweet was, got him. And they had like all three of them with the glasses on.
A little bit of breaking news as we get ready to head off. Dusty, prepare yourself.
Yeah.
Astros H. Framber Valdez has scratched from today's start with elbow soreness.
Oh.
He's being evaluated by doctors to determine the severity of the injury, which means...
Oh, no way!
Tommy John's already gone.
No way!
If you see elbow soreness after a scratch,
yeah,
I think you could just assume at this point.
It's weird how Tommy John had that surgery that was named after him.
Yeah, right? I know, right?
Yeah.
That's crazy. It's nuts.
Him and Lou Gehrig, who could see these things?
Do you think he gets residuals?
No.
No?
No.
Yeah, did he trademark it?
Look, we got an elbow problem. Got an elbow problem in Major League Baseball. And there was a video not Max Scherzer, but Justin Verlander. And he's talking about a conversation he had with Max Scherzer about, all right, the rash of injuries and elbow injuries and what is going what is leading to this. And he didn't blame the pitch clock. He was talking about how in the world of analytics now, max velo is everything. And what starting pitchers are doing is essentially they're coming in and pitching five innings like a closer where it's all gas because the analytics divisions in every major league team are saying once you get to the third time through the lineup, all of a sudden you get the hook no matter what. So these guys are being taught to go out and just gas it out for however long
you
have.
Hard break and hard velo.
And they're not learning how to pitch. And he said, you know, one thing that he and Scherzer had come up with is maybe you incentivize your DH position by saying, all right, if your pitcher doesn't get through more than five innings, you lose your DH moving forward. That may be a little bit extreme, but he said what needs to happen is ball clubs need to be incentivized to teach guys how to pitch 100
pitches. To actually go seven again. Yeah.
And not just gas out your arm early in games, which I don't know if I eliminate the DH for teams that don't have their pitcher go through, but at the same token, maybe Major League Baseball does need to look at incentivizing
compromise.
Having guys pitch.
Give them back some version of the sticky stuff and make them go 100 pitches.
Sure.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that'll do it for us. We'll have a national championship game recap tomorrow.
Yeah.
We'll have Bob Herrig from the Sports Illustrated Golf Writer. You're going to be at the Nike Hoop Summit.
I will be basketballed out.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow from noon to 3 right here on The Fan. Have a great day.
Bye. The exacerbation of the lack of sticky stuff.